The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to read some articles from the popular New York Times travel section. Now, this includes some ongoing series that take readers to places that not only are unique, but also are favorites among celebrities. Now, we're going to begin with 36 Hours in Kathmandu. Now, that's the capital of Nepal. This article, written by Seth Sherwood, with photos by Porus Chowdhury, and appeared in the February 27th, 2025 issue of the New York Times. So let us begin with 36 Hours in Kathmandu. By the way, Seth Sherwood lives in Paris, and he writes frequently for the New York Times travel section. And he's been visiting Kathmandu, he says, since 1999, so he should know a lot about it. Here we go. 10 years after a powerful earthquake devastated the Himalayan nation of Nepal, its crowded, colorful capital is resurgent. Nearly all of the UNESCO-listed centuries-old Hindu and Buddhist temples that sprinkled the city have been restored to their former glory, and the 19th Darahara Tower, a city icon, reopened in fall after a total reconstruction. And new developments are afoot. A dynamic young mayor, a 34-year-old former rapper and political newcomer named Balan Shah, has been cleaning up Kathmandu's streets and riverbanks, creating a more inviting city landscape for the pioneering handful of ambitious restaurants and nightlife venues that has begun to materialize. As Nepal's spring trekking and tourism season arrives, the city of monks and artisans has rarely been more appealing. And now, before he begins his main article, Seth Sherwood has a brief list of recommendations, some key stops you'd want to see if you were to visit Kathmandu. Durbar Square is an open-air complex of magnificent centuries-old temples, palaces, and monuments. And then we have a largely Tibetan neighborhood, the Budhnathnath, contains a stunning Buddha stupa temple, or stupa is a temple in Buddhism. And the century-old Garden of Dreams contains flower beds, exotic trees, rotundas, pavilions, and a cafe. And then we have the Pashupananath, a sacred Hindu site filled with temples, monkeys, and a riverside spot for ritual cremations. Mr. Sherwood also suggests some ways of getting around Kathmandu. One, through the Kathmandu has a bus system. Taxis are plentiful, cheap, and far more useful for travelers. Even most long-time expats rarely rely on taxis. Drivers rarely use the meter, so visitors should negotiate a price before you even get in the car. Trips between Kathmandu's central neighborhoods, Durbar Square, Thamel, and Lazimpat, should cost between 300 and 700 rupees. Journeys from central Kathmandu to slightly farther areas, such as Budhnath and Patan, will cost perhaps 50% more. A useful complement is the InDrive app, which allows users to book taxis for fixed, prearranged prices. Okay, it's time to begin the itinerary, and we're going to start on a Friday afternoon, and it's 4 o'clock, according to this article. And we're going for the Asan Toll, and it's 4 p.m., and we're going to brave the bazaars. No place embodies Kathmandu's buzzing, chaotic street life like Asan Toll. All day, women in saris, men in traditional Hakatapi hats, and bicycle rickshaws and wheezing motorbikes stream into the venerable spice market. Join the worshippers lighting candles at the copper-roofed temple of Annapurna, the goddess of food, and then head southwest down busy Sitihas Marg, a street of stalls packed with copperware, to Indra Chowk, and that's a garment market. Consider a pause for sublime yogurt lassis, that's 100 Nepalese rupees, or about 70 cents U.S., and at Janakapur Deli Lassi Bandar, a tiny shop abuts the Sri Vanshishwar Madhav Temple. Now, we're moving on to Durbar Square. It's 5 o'clock. Going to pay a visit to the palace. Lording nearly 120 feet over the cityscape, the magnificent 16th century pagoda-style Telazu temple cast its long shadow over the scores of other mostly Hindu monuments of Durbar Square. Admission is 1,000 rupees. Now, the open-air complex, built primarily between the 16th and 18th centuries, was damaged in the 2015 earthquake, and scaffolding and work crews still linger, but many masterworks of Nepali architecture and craftsmanship have been rebuilt. Now, highlights include the octagonal Chaisayan Dega Temple and the Shiva Parvati Temple, which features painted statues of God Shiva and wife Parvati in an upstairs window. Now, keen eyes will also catch the erotic scenes carved into the roof supports of the Jagannath Temple. Now, it's Friday evening, 7 p.m. We're going to eat your way around Nepal. Like food anthropologists, the folks at Ruthann have collected recipes and ingredients from Nepal's many regions and ethnic groups, and now serve up earthly concoctions just south of the Bagmati River in the restaurant's spare, simple dining room and tree-shaded garden. Dishes from the Tokali people, crispy buckwheat fries, Sherpas, potato pancakes with yak butter, and the Limbu and the Rai communities, fried pork nuggets and chewy soft lichen on rice cooked on mustard oil, often grace the menu. Now, pie made from thick sweet yogurt with a roasted barley flour crust balances the savory mange. Two people can eat three courses for about 3,000 rupees. Don't let those thousands fool you. That's a lot less in U.S. dollars. Now we're going to move into some musicology at 9 p.m. We're going to cue the music. The nearby leafy lanes hide bar restaurants like Musicology, a house and garden decked out in rock and roll paraphernalia, posters, instruments, album racks that host live music and serves numerous Nepali beers from bottles of hazy IPA by Barasinghe, 395 rupees, to pitchers of golden mild Sherpa Kumbu Kolsch, which is 1,695 rupees. Now, below the monster meal restaurant, Bar Bar, is an underground lounge that draws Kathmandu cool kids, foreign embassy staff, expat NGO workers, and other international types. Now, under the low ceiling, bartenders serve natural sriracha cocktails. This is vodka, mango juice, sriracha hot sauce, and you pay 1,100 rupees for that delightful drink. And then you have the Oktoberfest beer for 450 rupees, while DJs provide the mix. Well, we're going to spend Saturday exploring other sites in Kathmandu. We're going to start at 9 o'clock. We're going to have some croissants at Bro Bakery and then sample Kathmandu's cornucopia. Whether you're seeking Himalayan peanut butter, ceramic teapots, buffalo salami, or blackberry popsicles, the sprawling Saturday market hosted by La Sherpa Restaurant in the Lazampat neighborhood is both a colorful social scene and a chance to buy local specialties from the scores of vendors. Croissants are 250 rupees from the Bro Bakery. Yak cheddar sets you back 4,000 rupees per kilo by Himalayan French cheese. And then we have the chocolate bars with Timur pepper and pink salt for 550 rupees. All this from Nana's Delight, a stand that forms a makeshift breakfast, while the local project sells mohair sweaters for 12,500 rupees, among other items. I just had to figure that one out, and on the current market rate, you'd pay $87.50 U.S. for those sweaters. Now, it's 11 a.m., and you wander among the palms. Parks are rare in Kathmandu, which makes the Garden of Dreams particularly special. Built during the early 20th century in Edwardian and neoclassical styles, the high-walled enclave, 400 rupees, feels like a manicured estate of an English aristocrat. Gravel paths and brick walkways carry you under vine-draped trellises and fragrant trees, including palms, magnolias, and camellias, as fountains splash and birds flutter. Rotundas and pavilions provide shelter, and an Art Nouveau-style cafe serves up cappuccino for 450 rupees, and local English-language newspapers are available. Now it's 1 p.m. It's time to taste Tibet. Rife with tourist hotels, souvenir shops, mid-range restaurants, and noisy bars, the adjacent Taomal district can fill up like Bourbon Street in New Orleans on weekends. Fortunately, few folks noticed the second-floor Little Tibet restaurant overhead. decorated with richly painted traditional furniture and intricately symbolic paintings of Buddhas and mandalas, the restaurant leads you over the Himalayas with a tasty simple dishes like sincharu, that's tender buffalo tongue slices with onion, lemon, and spices. You'll pay 465 rupees for that one. Then a loo sip sip, and that's thin noodle-like potato strips fried with onion and tomato for 325 rupees. And then we have maktuk, and that's steamed buffalo meat dumplings in soup for 435 rupees. And now you can go fully local. You can try the creamy salty butter tea for 170 rupees. Now, it's 2:30, and we're going to behold the holy rituals. Captivating sights, sounds, and smells beckon from every corner of Nepal's most sacred Hindu site, the Pashupaninath, there we go, 1,000 rupees admission, a forest sprawl containing hundreds of stone temples and monuments dating mostly to the 16th and 17th centuries. Incense drifts, bells ring, monkeys leap between the trees as sadhus, holy men, in brightly colored garments sit among the marigold-draped shrines and statues asking for alms. But the most moving scenes unfold along the holy Bagmati River, where ritual funerals and cremations take place. After being carried down long steps and anointed with river water, the orange-shrouded bodies are burned in crackling flames on funeral pyres, their ashes filling the air as they return to the universe. Now at 4:30, it's time to walk in a sacred circle. 10 minutes away by taxi, the nation's most sacred Buddhist temple awakes, the Stupa of Badhanath, in the city's Tibetan neighborhood. Glimpsing the soaring white dome never ceases to awe. At the summit, a golden 13-step pyramid embodying the 13 steps to enlightenment crowns the 118-foot structure. You can join the neighborhood residents of all ages as they make ritual walks around the massive circular base, spinning its prayer wheels and lighting candles. Around the perimeter, shops sell Buddha figurines, Buddha-themed paintings known as thankas, prayer beads, and more are also available. And for sweeping views, the tall bottles of Yeti beer, 680 rupees, hit the rooftop of the P.D. Beans coffee shop. So that's at the top. Now it's 7 p.m. and it's time to dine in Bhaktapur. The three chefs of Kathmandu's most ambitious restaurant all worked or interned in impressive international kitchens, including Copenhagen's legendary Noma, in one case before opening Tusa in a beautiful traditional red brick house in the UNESCO-listed city of Bhaktapur, a 45-minute taxi ride from Budhanath. Now, its city admission is 1,800 rupees. All furniture, dinnerware, recipes, and ingredients come from Nepal, as do the chefs, who cook on a fire in the open kitchen. A recent 7-course tasting menu, which was 5,085 rupees, included brined chicken chunks on loamy black lentil dal with crispy potato and yak butter, and for dessert, a ring of firm reduced milk topped with orange yogurt and tiny red pellets conjured from Marcella berries in a feat of molecular gastronomy. What a description, huh? That menu would take half a day to read. Well, at 10:30 p.m., we have to drink some buffalo booze. An evening of world-class food and drink ends at Bark, a dark, sultry, and convivial cocktail lounge atop the Blue Star Complex. That's just north of Badmati River. Pull open the unmarked mirror to enter. Once again, Nepali ingredients take center stage, whether you're quaffing a spicy sukuti for 1,195 rupees, a salty, smoky mix of whiskey infused with buffalo jerky, vermouth, cocktail onions, and tomato juice, or you're sampling a tangy sweet Love Me Long Time for 1,095 rupees. This blends coriander-infused gin with lemongrass cordial, tamarind juice, and walnut bitters, rice liquor chai syrup, Bhaktapur yogurt, and grated yak cheese flavor, and other original libations. The most moving scenes unfold along the holy Bagmati River, where ritual funerals and cremations take place. Now, the final phase of our 36 hours in Kathmandu is going to take place on Sunday. It's 10 a.m., and we're going to shop in Patan. Now, are you seeking souvenirs? Well, the Storybook Center of Patan, a small city just south of Kathmandu, offers its own stunning temple square, also called Durbar Square. And some of the nation's finest artisans live there. For exquisite gilded Buddhas, and the streets around the Mahabuddha Temple burst with small specialist boutiques like Sanjay's Handicrafts, a two-level emporium of exquisite Buddhist and Hindu statuary. Nearby, brass and copper home decor and kitchenware fill the shops in Tichu Gali, a narrow lane. To find Om Handicrafts specializing in cashmere goods, silver jewelry, and seven metal singing bowls which emit a sustained tone when brushed with a mallet, you have to enter the unmarked doorway next to Ace Lapping Restaurant. Wherever you shop, always haggle. And finally, it's 12 p.m., and we're going to go for the goat here. As a haven of the Nawari people, the original inhabitants of the Kathmandu Valley, Patan abounds in restaurants serving their distinctive cuisine. Inside tiny 3G Hanacha, an all-female staff cooks up serving bowls of Nawari classics. Point to whatever looks compelling, and you'll receive a brief explanation, a copious portion. Goat lung, buffalo spinal cord, and especially buffalo tongue, as crispy, salty, and tender as Texas beef brisket, will wow adventurous eaters. Now, for tamer palates, Barra, a lentil pancake with fried egg, and chatamari, a crispy rice flour dish topped with diced onion and tomato, are crowd pleasers. And then we have yamari, which is doughy rice flour dumplings filled with molasses and chocolate. And that provides a sweet coda to the meal, and you stay. Lunch for two runs you about 1,200 rupees. And there you go, 36 hours in Kathmandu. Well, Seth Sherwood's article about Kathmandu triggered a long-ago memory for me. I was probably in my early teens, and I remember watching a documentary voiced by CBS News correspondent Lowell Thomas one evening. He did a weekly television show on unique places around the globe, and in that particular night, I recall, he took us to the ancient nation of Nepal, which we've been visiting their capital. As he introduced us to Kathmandu, Thomas spoke of how the name was associated with spies, magic, and mystery. I appreciate Seth Sherwood allowing us to update our knowledge of this famous Asian city. Another ongoing Times feature is called Five Favorite Places. Now, this allows celebrities to tell about the places they like to visit and explore. In writer Danielle Pergament's story, The Griselda Creator's Miami is an example, and this appeared in the March 1st, 2024 issue of the New York Times. And just so you know who we're going to be talking about, it's Eric Newman. He created the Netflix show Narcos and produced the new show with Sofia Vergara. He shares his love for a lesser-known side of the South Florida playground we call Miami. The magic of Miami is that you can still discover places, said the writer and producer Eric Newman. It doesn't feel like people have a chip on their shoulder. There's a healthy civic pride and gratitude. Mr. Newman, who created the Netflix show Narcos and produced Griselda, starring Sofia Vergara, has, over the years, spent months at a time on location in Miami. To Mr. Newman, a California native, the appeal of this southern Florida playground isn't just what it is, it's also what it's not. There's an appreciation in Miami that you don't see in other places, he said. Maybe it's because a lot of people here came from somewhere else. Maybe you came to escape East Coast winters, or you came to escape Castro, or you came to escape taxes. People in Miami are genuinely happy to be here, he said. Mr. Newman, 53, produced the Academy Award-winning movie Children of Men, and more recently was the executive producer of Painkiller in Narcos, Mexico. He favors a side of Miami not easily found in guidebooks. An after-hours salsa club, the Xanadu, hiding in plain sight, the best Cuban sandwich around. These are the secrets that Miami has slowly revealed to him. The diversity of Miami makes it feel like the least American city, which is kind of what makes it incredibly American, Mr. Newman said. It feels wonderfully foreign and yet uniquely American. Now, here are some of his favorite spots, I should say, in the city. We start with Cafe La Trova. La Trova is a show, explained Mr. Newman. The waiters are all immaculately dressed. They dance. You can tell that working there is a career, not a job. La Trova is owned by the master bartender Julio Cabrera, and the chief chef, Michelle Bernstein, is beloved for its impeccable drinks and its theatricality, there we go. Although the establishment in the middle of Little Havana has a robust menu that leans heavily toward empanadas, croquetas, and Cuban fare, the specialties are mojitos and other cocktails, all made with the flair of performance art. Now, La Trova has a James Beard semifinalist for its outstanding bar program in 2022. The decor, like the uniforms, is deliberate, a long bar lined with red bar stools, now lighting an impressive wall of spirits. You feel like you're in Havana 1958. It reminds me of The Godfather Part II, said the showrunner. It's a place where you go to drink and end up eating, or go to eat and end up drinking. The sandwiches are phenomenal, said Mr. Newman of the offering at Sandwich. He favors the house specialty, the panchan lechon sandwich of shredded pork, pickled onions, and garlic cilantro aioli on Cuban bread. I don't know of how many of these sandwiches I have left in my life. You don't want to eat one every day or even every week at this age, but I have decided that any more than I'm ever going to have are going to come from Sandwich. Now, the sandwich shop, its menu inspired by the pre-revolutionary Cuba, has locations in Little Havana and Little Haiti. The stars of the menu are not surprisingly the sandwiches, all of which have beef or pork. Vegetarian options are basically milkshakes and fries. And the limited hours serve a very useful purpose, at least for Mr. Newman. Thankfully, it closes at 6 p.m. because I would get into horrible trouble if it were open late. And then we had the Vizcaya Museum and Gardens. It looks like something that belongs in Newport, Rhode Island, surrounded by beautiful gardens, Mr. Newman of Vizcaya Museum of Gardens, a sprawling estate built as a vacation home in the early 1900s by a wealthy businessman named James Deering. In 1953, Vizcaya, which sits on the water in Coconut Grove, officially opened as a museum. A sort of American Versailles, Vizcaya has acres of outdoor gardens, a dozen buildings inspired by Italian Renaissance and Mediterranean styles, a cafe, event spaces, and naturally secret passageways throughout. There's something kind of melancholy about it for me, like Xanadu and Citizen Kane or the Hearst Castle, a sort of monuments to oneself, but it's beautiful, Mr. Newman said. Vizcaya has had many notable guests over the years, including Ronald Reagan, Pope John Paul II, and Queen Elizabeth II. As much as I appreciate the exhibits, I love to sort of wander around the gardens and get a bit lost, said Mr. Newman. You can look out at the bay from the Gatsby-esque house and just lose yourself. I remember liking the way that felt very much. Then we have the 27 Restaurant and Bar. Now, I went here for the first time last night, and it was amazing, kind of this weird, strange, wonderful experience, he said. My wife and I walked into what appeared to be a hostel. There was a guy behind a desk who was going over a bill with some backpacker, and my wife and I were like, well, this can't be the place. In fact, 27 Restaurant is part of the Freehand Hotel, an upscale hostel, a couple of blocks from the Miami Beach area. And then we were in this pool area lit by tiki torches, and I finally asked someone, is there a restaurant here? And around the corner, as you got closer, you heard how alive it was, Mr. Newman said. The menu borrows from American South and Afro-Caribbean food. The decor is eclectic and mismatched, and tables are communal. And the oyster mushrooms are amazing, Mr. Newman said. So are the shrimp dumplings. We had three orders of them. Then we have Siboney Night. Now, I'm 53, and I don't really go out anywhere anymore, but Miami has a different energy, said Mr. Newman, whose favorite after-hours spot is Siboney Nightclub in West Miami. The Salsa Club, open Thursdays to Saturdays, 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., is very no-frills, he said. Its authenticity makes him a repeat visitor. It's not one of those places that you would walk by and go in. Oh, we've got to go in and see what's going on, he said. It's entirely Latin, and there's something transportive about it. So there's some time in Miami. Now, our next article, Joshua Bell's London, also from the Five Favorite Places series in the New York Times. The article appearing in the Times, February 22, 2023 issue. The celebrated violinist Joshua Bell talks with writer Danielle Pergament and offers five favorite spots in Britain's capital city. Now, Bell says he's visited London some 70 times since the 1980s. So let's learn more about this gentleman and his favorites in London. The first time I came to London, I was 17, the violinist Joshua Bell, now 54, told me. We were at dinner together following a recent performance of his at Wigmore Hall, a small but renowned concert hall. I came with my parents to make my first album, he continued. This was in the 80s, and I remember thinking there wasn't a lot of variety in food. Now, of course, it's great. Mr. Bell estimates he's been to London around 70 times since then. One of the problems with classical music is that it's developed a reputation of formality, Mr. Bell said. In fact, classical music can be the most exciting thing to watch. So no, the virtuoso and one-time child prodigy doesn't live in London, but you could say he's a professional visitor. His London is one of the exquisite taste, uncommonly good food, and a handful of tiny places you'd breeze right by if you didn't know they were there, with, of course, a measure of music. Mr. Bell tends to favor lesser-known places, with one very notable exception, the Royal Albert Hall. The Royal Albert Hall has this thing called the Proms. They take out the seats on the lower level, and people line up down the street just to get in, he said, and all these people are standing up like it's a rock concert and it's Beethoven symphonies. It's incredible, he said. Well, here are some favorite places. We have, first of all, J&A Beer. In August 2001, I walked into Charles Beer's shop to pick up a set of strings, and Charles Beer said to me, "You have to take a look at the Huberman violin. It's on its way to Germany." The instrument, made by Antonio Stradivari in 1713 and known as the Gibson X Huberman, was legendary. I knew the famous story of the violin, Mr. Bell said, recounting its theft from a dressing room in Carnegie Hall in 1936. Rows of violins hang by their necks in a showcase. Some have tags hanging off of them. And then we move on to Trishna. The tasting menu at Trishna in Marylebone is partly what draws Mr. Bell. I did an event in New York with Salman Rushdie, Mr. Bell said. At one point, we were talking about London, and he recommended Trishna. I love Indian food, but Trishna is not your typical Indian restaurant. The problem with Indian food for me is that I want to try a lot of things. I just don't want to have one lamb curry as my dinner. And as we move on now to Wigmore Hall doesn't have my name name recognition to the general public, said Mr. Bell, of the 552-seat concert hall in Marylebone. But with a small stage and well-vivid seating, Wigmore Hall has a hushed, intimate appeal. And then we had the Baglioni Hotel. When days are packed with rehearsals and evenings are given to performing, proximity to one's bed is important. As a nice hotel around that bed. And so, when he plays at the Royal Albert Hall, Mr. Bell always stays at Hotel Baglioni, just a stone's throw away. He says it's a great location. I can walk to the rehearsals and back. In fact, walk right across the street to Hyde Park. I call it my home when I'm at the Proms. And then we had the Fidelio Cafe. That's the final item. Very few places like this exist or dare to offer this, said Mr. Bell, a Fidelio Cafe. The this in question is the intersection of a sweet little bistro and live, world-class classical music. Imagine a cafe where the walls are peppered with actual sheet music. So if you read music, you'll have fun at that cafe, right? My friends, that's going to bring us to the end of today's Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed the journey and that you'll be with us again next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now, Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any comments or questions, please direct them to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.